worked in corporate, did real well. I was the guy who always could pull the spreadsheets and tell them what was wrong with where the issues were. And then finally, I got sick of corporate and I said, you know what? I've always wanted to do this. And I left corporate and I help people with money in spreadsheets now. I figured out how to market it.
Welcome to the Small Business Safari, where I help guide you to avoid those traps, pitfalls, and dangers that lurk when navigating the wild world of small business ownership. I'll share those gold nuggets of information and invite guests to help accelerate your ascent up that mountaintop of success. It's a jungle out there, and I want to help you traverse through the levels of owning your own business that can get you bogged down and distract you from achieving your own personal and professional goals. So strap in, adventure team, and let's take a ride through the safari and get you to the mountaintop. All right. Well, Rocky, we're excited to have you on our show today. Alan, we start every show. Rocky, we always start every show with a cheers.
Cheers.
Because we like to drink a little beer while we're talking. So,
ooh, that's a big cup.
It's got water. Nobody told me to bring a beer.
Come on. You're in Pennsylvania. It's cold out. That should be full of something.
If I had known, I would have.
And we're drinking Leinenkugel.
Right? No. Yingling.
Yingling?
Still, yeah, it's Pittsburgh.
There you go. Pittsburgh. That's Pennsylvania, right. Baby. All right.
Well, you're in
Harrisburg. Yingling's up in Pottstown, isn't it? Pottsville?
I don't know. The Pittsburghers, the Yinzers, they claim it.
Yingling.
Yeah. Last time I was up there, I'm like, do you have any good local beer? And they're like, yeah, we've got this Yingling. And I didn't let them on that the rest of the world is very familiar with Yingling. Whoa, this is good. I like Yingling.
So growing up in Michigan with beer, the first one I ever heard from Pennsylvania was Rolling Rock, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you come across Yingling, and the first person I ever came, I'm like, oh, I haven't had this before. And they're like, are you kidding me? It's the oldest brewery in the U.S.
Right.
And, of course, my answer was, I thought that was Sam Adams. He's like, are you a beer drinker or what?
I said, yes. That didn't go over very well, did it?
No.
You know how to make friends, Chris.
I do. Win friends and influence people. And with that, let's get going. Let's go talk about a little bit more about Rocky. So I went on Rocky's podcast to talk about, he is the Profit First Answer Man, one of his many podcasts he does. But I found the conversation engaging, and he definitely can help serve the audience with a lot of great stories and experience that he's had working with other companies. But before we get that far, Rocky, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you came from and how you got here?
So I had the reverse path of most entrepreneurs, right? As a kid, I was very entrepreneurial. I grew up outside of New York City, and I would go into New York City and buy stuff wholesale and come back and mark it up 100% and sell it to all my my school friends. And I made a ton of money doing this. And then I was told I had to go to college, right? Because that's what you're supposed to do. So I went to college. And when I got out of college, I realized what my super skill was. It was like, I know how to build spreadsheets. So even when I was in high school, I was going into these big companies showing their accountants how to go from paper ledger to, back then it was VisiCalc, right? One of the first electronic spreadsheets. And then when I was in college, I was working for a bank. They're like, hey, will you build us these spreadsheets? Because nobody knew how to do it back then. I said, you know, I would love to build a business just teaching people and building spreadsheets for them. But it was the late 80s and there was no internet. I had no idea how to market. I had no idea how to say to people, hey, can I build you a spreadsheet? And what, you know, what's the value of it even? And so I went off and I went to work and worked in corporate, did real well. I was the guy who always could pull the spreadsheets and tell them what was wrong with where the issues were. And then finally, I got sick of corporate and I said, you know what? I've always wanted to do this. And I left corporate and I help people with money in spreadsheets now. I figured out how to market it.
So you were working in that big company, working on those spreadsheets. You thought you had this awesome idea. How many awesome ideas did you see and not go after?
Oh, a million.
Yeah.
Like real estate. As a kid, I knew how to do every part of the work and fixing the house because we didn't have a ton of money. So you did it yourself. You know, I laid shingle, I tiled the bathroom, I, you know, did the studs and put up stuff. And I was even selling real estate when I was in college. I was a realtor. And yet I just didn't buy the damn rental house till I was in my 40s.
Right. But he did insinuate that maybe being handy around a house, he should have started a handyman business. And let me tell you, you didn't miss on that one, big guy, because I'm doing it. And I promise you, that wasn't the way you wanted to go. So you did a good thing by not doing that. But
my imagine the world before Excel.
You know, I started on Quattro Pro. I was, I was in grad school and I was a Quattro Pro junkie. And the one before that one was probably the one Rocky's talking about. I can't remember the name of that one product that was a spreadsheet.
The first was VisiCalc. I'm not sure. And then it was Lotus 1-2-3 was what took over next.
That's right. So for me, I go to grad school and we started working with our sister university in England. I was in Charlotte and I got on this thing where you could actually send a message to the guy in England and he would send you one back.
Ooh,
what's it sound like? Yeah. Right. So I was on the first internet, which was the EDU environment. Right. And somebody said, I think there's a lot of promise there. I'm like, nope. I'm going to go off and get into manufacturing and I'm going to make aerospace parts. Screw that. Not doing that. Strike number one, Chris, there you go. So you get out, you start, you left the corporate America gig. You started doing it. Your first business that you started was teaching people how to use the spreadsheets or tell us a little bit more about that first business.
I don't actually teach people how to use spreadsheets. What I do is create spreadsheets so that business owners understand what's going on in their business, because most of them aren't accountants. They don't want to be, they don't want to look at spreadsheets. They can't figure out what the accounting reports say. So basically what I do is I build the data engine behind it. And then I tell them, hey, did you know this is going on? Did you know these are your margins? Did you know if you do this, you can increase your profitability by this? So it was more analyzing the data and reading what the spreadsheet said and telling them how they could improve their profitability.
So one of the things we talk about, and a lot of people who listen to the podcast are thinking of leaving corporate America, starting their own business. Let's take you back to that point where you said, here I am, I'm in the zoo, and I've got to get out, and I'm going to go out. Did you go out with a plan? Did you say, screw it, I'm out of here? Did you have clients already lined up? Tell us a little bit about that time in your life.
So I went out with a plan. This is what I wanted to do, and it probably took me from the time the decision was made to walking out the door 6 months. In the meantime, I was looking at who was I going to partner with. I looked at a lot of different models. I talked to a lot of people. Hey, does this sound like a viable business? What can I charge? Who should I partner with? I ended up partnering with Profit First. They were most in line with what I wanted to do. I liked their corporate culture and how they did things. I will say this. I know that it takes 3 years to start a business. So I had a 3-year runway that I could go start my business, and I didn't expect to make money 60 days out or 90 days out. I had set up plans so that I had the flexibility to take the time to do it right and to build it slowly, because it takes time to build a business.
Wow, it sounds like you had good insight and were very smart, and I should have met you before I did it.
Well, and I would assume that a guy who as a kid was hosing his friends with 100% markup would have had a really ambitious business plan. Like, I'm going to be profitable in 90 days. I'll get the yacht in 6 months, the island to dock it in 18.
I know. I was going the same way. I was like, I'm sure you already had your design on the plane you're buying and in which property you're going to buy in the Bahamas and the whole thing.
We had the business plan of how many clients, how long it was going to take, and what the profitability and everything else looked like. You know, for me, I'm at the point in life where the money is not as important as time. So for me, I built a time-based business. This is how much time I'm going to devote to the business. And this is what I need the business to return to me in exchange for that time. But I don't have a business that requires me to kill myself, and I never will.
I love that. The fact that you said you built it around your time and did the return on what's going to work. Also, you did something that I did not do, and that is I didn't partner with anybody. I didn't buy into a franchise. I went out and said, I'm going to go do my own thing because I am smarter than everybody else, and I was going to break even in 18 months. And actually, I was on the Rocky 3-year plan. I just didn't know it at the time. But so you decided to partner with Profit First and did that. Talk a little bit about that, because that's the Mike Michalowicz book that a consulting practice was built out of. Talk a little bit about why you chose them. You said you like their corporate model. You like some of the things, but give us a little bit more insight on that.
So one of the big things was, after I sat down with Profit First and I saw what they did and how much material they provided, I realized I had a choice. I could do this myself. I said I could create all my own material and do everything that's required to make this a viable business. I also realized that doing all of that was not what I wanted to do, that none of that is spreadsheets. I was like, this is not what I will enjoy. This is not what I want to do. I will struggle and hate this business. So why not partner with somebody who's done all of that, who hands it all to me on a silver platter, who hands me a process that I can customize and build to my needs? Now, understand what Mike's program is, I had been doing since I was 21 years old. So I was already doing Profit First in the way I ran my life. I just didn't have the words to use it for business, but the whole mindset was already there. And Profit First is the mindset. So all of the pieces were there. I'm like, do I create my own language? I'm like, this is just too much work. And so that's why I partnered with Mike. Looking back, I'm thrilled, because I will say the amount of branding and awareness he has saved me so much trouble and so much work. Yeah, and having everything ready has also made it so much easier for me.
That, you hit on the one thing I think is a huge gold nugget for a lot of folks, is you don't have to go out there and create the whole thing from scratch. And you also don't have to necessarily franchise. There is another way to do this. And you hit on one thing. You said, I knew I was going to hate that. I'm going to hire somebody who's better at this and do the thing I hate so I can do the thing I love. And that's going to help accelerate my time. And you hit on another thing we've all talked about. The one thing we all talk about is you can't get time back. You can get money back, but you can't get time back. So I love that you brought that up and you did that. So you come out, you get the Profit First model. Did they feed you clients, or did you have to have your own business plan to go find your own clients?
I had to go find my own clients. And when I had announced, I mean, I had been doing all the behind the scenes work for years, because I knew eventually I was going to do this. It was just, how do you walk away from a six-figure, wonderful corporate job with all kinds of benefits? And, you know, one kid in college, another on their way. And just say, hey, I'm just going to do this. So that, I think, was part of it. And then I started off, and then I think within 6 months, all my clients left. So then I had to restart. Well, part of that was, I mean, it rolled into the beginning of COVID. So, you know, that was kind of the second smack. And then you just rebuild, you pivot, and you just keep going. And after that, it took off.
So you actually, I was going to ask you that question. Did you ever have that, oh shit, what have I done to myself moment? Did they all leave at the same time? Or did you ever have that, oh my God, what have I just done?
You know, it wasn't an oh my God, because it was still early and I knew I had the runway. And so I was okay with it. And I was like, okay, this happened. It's to be expected. You know, business is not going to be a straight line. It's a roller coaster. Part of that, too, is I think me figuring out my best avatar for who I'm going to serve and just refining that, me getting my sales messaging down, me networking like crazy. It was a ton of work to go out and make all of that happen and just constantly updating. The other thing is, it took about 6 months for me to get through that Profit First training as well, to get all those systems in place, to get the website built, to do everything else. It did take a while.
So networking was how you drove your customers to start? It didn't come out very smooth, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So it was networking.
That's why I'm on a podcast. I put words together. Sometimes,
so eloquently.
Sometimes good.
Sometimes I speak well. Yeah. Thank you, Alan. So yeah, networking.
It started in-person networking, and then, did we mention COVID?
Yeah, we did.
Overnight, all my in-person networking that was just about to put all these clients on my calendar, overnight, done. The second problem that occurred is I was networking with bankers and people who could refer to me. Well, do you know what bankers were doing for the 6 months right after COVID? They were doing PPP and EIDL loans.
That's right.
That was all they were focused on. So everybody that I was talking to all of a sudden was focused and was going a million miles an hour dealing with all the changes coming with government. In the meantime, most businesses were in panic mode. But here's what the cool thing that happened. In just as quick as the in-person events canceled, the online world opened up, and everyone who's willing to meet was online within days. Like literally, my calendar emptied and refilled within days.
Were you going? Were they weekly? Were they monthly? Tell us some of those places that you've started to find people in those Zoom calls, because I did the same thing.
It was all over the board. Some of it was weekly. Some of it was every 2 weeks. Some of it was monthly. I think everybody who had a group who realized, hey, this is going to be around, took whatever they had and put it online, which allowed me to go from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to the entire country like that. And so that changed it. The second thing that changed is when I was meeting people local, I drive 30 minutes to meet them for breakfast or lunch or whatever, and they're 15 minutes late. And then, you know, we meet for an hour and then I got 30 minutes back home. For whatever reason, when you're on Zoom, we start at 12, you start at 12. We end at 1, we end at 1. The next one starts at 2, we start at 2. Like, it's just like this. And the amount of people I could meet was transformational.
Yeah, there were some good and bad things that happened. And Al and I are both big believers in networking. That's how we both were able to build our businesses early on as well. And it was all in person. And then it just stopped. And at the time, I was in a weekly group called BNI. I was in two monthly groups, one where I'm on the board of the local remodeling chapter of NERI, and then also the chamber here. And it just went away. But then here comes these Zoom things, and you're exactly right, especially here in Atlanta. I don't know if you've heard about this. We have some really bad traffic. That's being
once
sarcastic.
In a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Like every once in a while. I think our rush hour right now is like from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. And it never stops. But the Zoom I was able to start keeping up with those and doing even more. And then as we've come out of that world and going back to in-person, I've actually delegated almost all of my networking now to my sales managers and my remodeling managers. And I've kept the thing that I'm the board member of. And that's my one once a month in-person networking now that I'm doing. But I think that's been good. Are you finding now that you're still keeping with virtual for networking, or are you doing a combination? What's going on now?
So the virtual has kind of dropped a little bit. I think after about a year, some of the groups kind of slowed down and went away, especially the ones that were just kind of created in the midst of the pandemic. The long-term groups, some of them are going back to in-person, depending on where they are in the country. Honestly, I built my business to the point that I don't have time to go do that anymore. So I have stepped out of that. What's actually picked up is the other thing I did as soon as COVID hit, I finally launched the podcast, the second one. And because the first one was not properly targeted. The second one was super targeted, exactly where I needed to be. I stole all the ideas from other people. I told them I stole their ideas. They loved it. They're friends of mine, so it's okay. And the podcast now just puts people on the calendar and generates leads. Because I teach everyone what to do. They know who I am. I'm not banging on them, sending them email after email. They choose to listen, and then eventually they show up on my calendar.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about this avatar. I actually just brought this up in a meeting I was at where I said avatar, and the guy had never heard the phrase before. And he says, yeah, my avatar is me on the beach. And he started referencing it.
I said, my avatar is a pizza.
Yeah. I did. I went, no, man, I'm talking about who's your target customer. Tell me a little bit more.
Why did you just say that?
Because avatar is so much cooler sounding, man.
So vanity words.
Hey, This is big. Rocky used one. I can use one too. I stayed with it.
Rocky's so, cooler than you.
He is.
It's industry lingo. Like if you're in the industry, that's what they say.
I left corporate so I wouldn't have to play corporate bingo anymore. Although I kind of missed that.
But
was fun.
But you caught something. Like that's when I told people, hey, we're going in studio for our podcast. It sounds really cool. My little remodeling and handyman company here. We come into this one office. We actually made a sign that says podcast studio. And we put up this beautiful stuff back here. I was like, yeah, we're in studio. So let's go back to Avatar and let's teach Alan a little bit more. As you refined it, tell us what the first one looked like and where did you make those refinements? Because I think that's a lot of things that people have to really figure out.
Well, the first one was anyone who would pay me.
There you go.
It's a pretty broad avatar.
I'm looking for the entire ocean, one drop at a time.
Yeah, I think... You know, over time, I came to realize where can I make the most difference in a client? What does that client kind of look like? What size? Who is resonating with me? And that has kind of driven a certain person to me. They like the way that I think or talk or whatever. So I've attracted people who are very similar to me, who have similar worldviews. And the other thing is I'm looking at small business owners that are probably in the $1 to $5 million range. In other words, they know how to generate revenue. They're not struggling because that's not my scope. I don't help them increase revenue. I help them keep more revenue. So you got to figure out how to bring it in. And that's where I can make enough of a difference that they can justify my investment. And they're not big enough that they're going to have somebody in-house doing it. So I kind of found an unserved niche, which is, you know, those bigger, smaller companies that don't have anybody that can really help them. And for the most part, most of these guys don't need somebody 24/7 on their team. They need somebody a couple hours a month to really help them understand their finances, tell them what to do next, and let them go run.
So you're kind of a fractional CFO of sorts.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, Alan. When you say those words, my target audience disappears. Because
I'll retract. Well, yeah,
think about it. It CFO sounds like a guy in a suit and a tie who's going to talk wonk, wonk, wonk that I can't understand. I'm not this big corporation. And so we stayed away from those words very specifically. I created my own CPO, Chief Profitability Officer, because everyone wants one of those.
I like it. And I like the fact that, because you're right, fractional CFO, I've actually is a term that I've had to research myself at the size of I'm at. I'm just under 5 million now, and we're looking to actually grow quite a bit. I've actually started to target that one. But in the beginning, if you would have came to me and said, hey, I'm a fractional CFO, I think you're right. I probably would have shut down, because even though I didn't know what it was, I know it's not what I wanted, because fractional CFO tells you the same thing. You're thinking suit and tie, guy who wants to talk at the $20 million, $30 million level. And you're just sitting there going, I'm trying to figure out how to get to the $4 million level, man. Just, you know, make it easy on me. Huh. So is it industry specific, or do you find that that's not where the avatar lives? It's that 1 to 5 million small business, regardless of industry vertical.
So I think there are certain industries that I can serve better, in the sense that, can we make a difference? Some industries are very constrained. They don't have pricing power. They don't have a lot of flexibility in what they do. And so I'm really not allowed, I can't bring them a lot of value. So from that standpoint, that's one. The other is I have a lot of history in real estate. So I flipped houses, I've done rentals. I understand the business. So a lot of the people who were also coming to me were either in the real estate business or were around the real estate business or were business owners who wanted to invest in real estate. So that was kind of one of the things that brought a lot of them to me is, hey, I get this expert and he will help me with my real estate as well, as far as, you know, understanding the lingo. I think the other thing that we talk a lot about is that time balance. So if somebody is trying to just make money, 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 I'm probably not the person for them, right? I'm trying to balance life and money and bring the two together. And then the other thing I talk about is being a parent. So like, you know, are you present at home? How are we going to get you out of the business? And how are we making sure that you're living your life in harmony? So those are kind of some of the themes, I think, that resonate with the type of people that, and I'm somewhat anti-school, and that comes out every so often.
I love that. The three good big gold nuggets there. Number one, the real estate to investor tie and not being price sensitive. I think that's a good point. So if you got the opportunity where you can play with your pricing a little bit, that helps. You're not a commodity business, which we don't want to be. But the other one was this whole thing. And we heard this on another podcast and Joe Perrone brought that up to us. And his phrase was, he had an epiphany moment. He had literally an anxiety attack on his automotive repair floor in the middle of his shop and had to be rushed to the hospital. And he came out of that saying, you know what? I had my ladder on the wrong building of success. And Rocky's shaking his head and nodded his head with us and saying, absolutely. So when you talk about that, a lot of times people go, oh, that's the fluffy stuff. But if you've been running your business, you start to realize that's the important stuff. That's where the gold comes from. We were trying to chase the almighty dollar, and I did the same thing. I would do anything to anybody at any time when I started my handyman business. And now we're picking and choosing some places where we're like, you know, we're just not going to go there. We're not going to work for that kind of an individual. I'm not going to work for a slumlord who's got four different rental properties because he's not going to value our business, and we don't have the time to not make him happy and make ourselves miserable in the process. So when you work with people on that, what do you think when people say work-life balance? Is there a percentage that you think people should strive for?
That is a horrible word, and I don't use it anymore. And I'll tell you why.
Rocky has his own dictionary. He just strikes out words at random and replaces them.
I like that because, and I love that he's buying into this one because I love this number because early on, I can't wait to hear his response. So I'm going to wait.
I can't either.
So what does balance mean? It means equal. It means that you're there. That word puts in people's mind a horrible connotation. How am I supposed to figure out balance? So I get the home life balance, and then I get the work life balance, and then I get the fun life balance. And by the time the first plate's spinning, the second plate's falling, and it's crazy. So what we do is we talk about harmony. Life is like music, right? If you think about a song, at some point during the song, the drums are going hot and heavy. Another point, it might be the piano. A third point, it might be the vocals. But when the vocals are going on, the drums are still playing. And you're going back and forth. You're creating harmony with that music that sounds great. Do the same with your life, right? There's times where you're going to have a business sprint. There's times where you need to have a home sprint. There's times where you need to be with your kids sprint. There's times where you need to be alone sprint. And it's not that they're some percentage, because your percentage is different than mine. And we're all going to try and get this percentage and we're going to struggle. Why not just enjoy and realize that, hey, there's different times in life. Like right now we are in COVID, right? So I can't tell you during the month of December into January, like literally half my clients either had COVID or were touched by COVID. You got to change, right? You have to pivot. You have to realize that life goes back and forth and there's no balance. But there's times where certain things are important. And this is what I also tell. If you don't want to worry about this, your home life and your business, and it's all business, 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 that's great. Except when your spouse walks away and takes half your business with him or her and leaves you high and dry. So from a profitability standpoint, the number one thing you need to do is make sure your spouse is happy.
Harmony and happy wife, happy life. And yeah. I still have struggled with that one and will continue. But I like that because basically what I'm going to start going away with now is my life is like a song, but I think sometimes it feels like Black Hole Sun from Pearl Jam. And they're just absolutely kicking the absolute living crap out of me. So with that, what song would you say is your life right now? What song comes to mind for each of you guys?
Oh my God.
Come on.
No,
I know. Huh? What song would you say, you know, my life is like this song, perfect balance, you know, Stairway to Heaven.
You know better than to ask me impromptu questions.
How about Highway to Hell? From AC/DC. You can see where I am.
Mine comes from One Republic. I Lived.
I like it. All right. I'm going to go listen. I'm going to actually put that on my playlist and listen to that one later. I live.
That's going to pump you up.
I love it.
Of course, there's always my theme song. You could play that any day.
Oh, geez. Let's see if we can figure that one out, Rocky. I love it. I love it. That's right. Oh, that's good stuff. So Alan doesn't have an answer because I asked him an impromptu question. So good news is, if you stick around for the next podcast, he'll probably pop out in the middle of nowhere going, hey, I figured out my song.
It's now this. I'm a processor. It'll come to me in the middle of the night.
All right. So we'll get that on the next podcast for Alan. Rocky, let's shift back. Why don't you give us one of the best client success stories and what you did, where you took them from? And I think we got the theme here is that you're not just coming in there just to help them be a profitable money-making machine. It's a harmony machine. It's a lifestyle machine. Talk about somebody you took from point I'm dead to I'm now living and I've got my harmony in my life.
So two clients come to mind. They've been with me the longest. They've both kind of gone through the same journey. One of the first things I do, so my intro call, in other words, the first call after a client signs up with me, I spend 2 hours getting to know them as a person, right? We start at the beginning. Tell me about how you grew up. Tell me how you learned about money. Because everyone's got money mindsets, right? If I ask you money is, you'll have an answer to what money is for you. And what I'm trying to figure out is there underlying things that are going to prevent them from financial success in the future. And then I ask them what their dreams are. What are your plans? What do you want out of life? How does your business fit into that? How do we create harmony? One of the books I recommend a lot is, it's Michael Hyatt's. It's called Living Forward. It's a proven plan to stop drifting and get the life that you want. And if a client wants, what I basically do is I say, hey, go read the book. And I just give them accountability to getting it done because it takes about 3 months to define what you want. And once they define what they want, it becomes easy for us to look at their business and say, how does the business serve you instead of you serving the business? The biggest thing these clients tell me now, you know, a year and a half or whatever later is, we've never had so much money in the bank. We've never had so much cash. Like, this is weird. What do we do? Like, enjoy, right? Build wealth outside your business. Start to go do those things that you talk about. And along those same lines, I talk to my clients. I'm like, when are you taking vacation? You need to close the store. You need to close your business, or you need to let go of your business and go away. And so we create that harmony in life that there's more to life than just the business.
That's such an important point where I've gone through the exercise where I do a pretty good job of doing an annual plan for my company and figuring out where we're going to go. But I've also started to embrace another plan because I'm part of a CEO group where we get together once a month and we have a meeting. And this year for our annual planning, not only do we have to talk about our business, we had to talk about our people, then we had to talk about ourselves. And then the big one is, what is the legacy you want to bring at the end of this year? What legacy are you looking to bring? And these are all really hard questions if you take the time to do them. And Rocky, all the questions you just brought up, those are ones that I think a lot of people avoid because they're really hard to think about. Because it's easier to put your head down and go get that next sale. It's easy to put your head down and open up the store in the morning and start to welcome in customers. It's easy to do that and take it on because you're used to that pain and the agony of working with customers. Did I say that out loud? Damn it. I was doing
customers
so good.
Our joyful creatures.
So that's my avatar is people who are willing to do the hard stuff, who are willing to go do that work.
Willing to do the hard work.
Part of the book, you write your eulogy. So my eulogy is written. Now I know what I have to go do. Life is easy.
Yeah, the legacy part was an interesting one for me. And I will tell you one of the things that I didn't say this, I had it parroted back to me and I've really started to embrace it, is that I'm trying to lead the next generation. Because I have a summer entrepreneurship class that I did last summer. And the challenge I've gotten from them is, you need to do that again for those people. Do you not think that those 10 kids who did the sessions last year got something out of it? And I'm like, well, I know they did. because it was great. And Alan was part of it and he got to see him happen.
Yeah, it was a really cool thing he did.
So that's the challenge. So that's actually the legacy for me this year is I'm going to do the summer entrepreneurship class here in Atlanta again. Five classes talking to him about just, again, what we talked about before, having, and I'm going to steal Rocky's words because Rocky stole from other people. And I'm thinking about being a consultant, which a consultant is just stealing with pride. So I'm going to steal I'm going to steal Harmony, but I'm going to do that again because I told them I really love seeing young people get energized about something else you said, Rocky, too, is that I've actually just had somebody tell me that they want to get my book in the hands of college kids who are thinking about starting their own business because it's real world practical advice they'll never learn in school. And this is coming from a guy who had 6 years of education after high school. So I love that you said that, you know, school, it serves some people, but not others, but always continually learning is great. Didn't you say
who does it serve? Who does school serve?
Rocky
professors?
He hated school. That's right. Well, I'm just trying. You know what? Actually, you got to make a stand. You're right. School, you got to really look at what you're going to get out of it. And what's it going to do for you, right? Yeah. What's it going to do for me? If school helps me get somewhere.
All I know is if I need surgery, I kind of want somebody who went to school.
You do?
Yeah. Just saying.
I think I tell you what, I've come a long way on this one because I was on my way.
It's like,
you're right. I'm not going to let you cut on my heart if you haven't been to school or been practicing.
No, yeah, but that's not college. That's medical school. That's after college.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, you go to school. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, why do you have to give $200,000 to school? Go out and fail.
How to do a keg stand.
You know what? I did really good. I can actually just proved it again this fall. I can shotgun a beer. Even though they said the kid beat me, I still felt like I won. They're like,
rematch.
I wanted a rematch. In fact, I'm coming back this fall, kid. And so I'm coming for you because I'm making these kids listen to it. Anybody who went to my summer entrepreneurship class, I said, you got to start downloading my podcast. But they still aren't. But go back. I think you're right. People finding like the real world advice and mentors. And that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you have a mentor today? Do you have somebody that you work with that helps you with your own business that you go to and confide on in certain issues?
Yeah. So I'm part of a mastermind group. I was part of that mastermind group. And they helped me through the journey of walking away from corporate and building my business and even just coaching me through my sales skills, how I was viewing things, changing my mindset. So every week we meet and, you know, every 6 weeks, you're a man in the middle and they will call you out on everything.
So you guys meet weekly, the group.
We meet weekly. Yeah. Wow. It comes out of Aaron Walker, Iron Sharpens Iron, View from the Top. So Aaron was in a mastermind group with, you know, Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Miller.
I don't know Dan.
Dan Miller's 48 Days to the Life. And Work You Love. So he was part of this mastermind group for decades. And now he runs a bunch of mastermind groups himself. And it's all about accountability. Like in that group, we have something called Come As You Will Be 2023. So on January 1st, 2020, we already decided what we were going to have accomplished on December 31st, 2023.
And so it's a three-year outlook.
It's a three-year outlook. We've got, you know, quarterly I report. Hey, this is where I'm going towards my plan. Here's where I get my goals. Here's where I'm struggling. What can I do here? Who can help me?
Yeah, I joined a group. It's a monthly group that 3 years ago I joined it. And I would have to say I attribute a number of things I've done successfully to that group. That's the group that I said, hey, I'm going to do this summer entrepreneurship class. And a number of them said, hey, I'll do whatever you want. And I had them come in and talk to the kids. And Alan was part of this as well. And it's really energizing to do that. But it's also, I get energized and I also absolutely dread going there if I'm not prepared. And that's that accountability piece, right? And that's where I think having that group really can help you evolve because being in your own business by yourself, kind of lonely. And you don't have anybody to talk to because those guys know more about my life than even my wife does. because I had to share a number of things with them that they've helped me process issues that you could only hope never happen to you. And they have, and these guys have helped me. And so I think that's a huge part too, is that you don't have to go this thing alone, and don't ever think that, because I do think school does teach you to do it alone, right? They teach you to go sit there and work it out by yourself and use your brain, but not work with people. And life is all about working with people.
Well, and I think it's the NEA says it's the four C's, and I can't remember exactly. It's critical thinking, collaboration. I think it's communication, and there's one other C. But basically, they say we don't have a curriculum to actually teach this. We can't figure out how to do it. So school doesn't teach you the skills you need for life. Like, do they teach you how to network? No. Do they teach you how to sell? No. Do they teach you money? No. I have an MBA. They didn't teach me money, right? Do they teach you, you know, the softer side of social skills and that kind of stuff? No. They make you feel bad because you're wearing the wrong sneakers, or you're not good at sports, or you're too dumb for math class. And so where is this help? Like,
yeah, I think
we got to redo the whole curriculum.
All right, Rocky's on it. So Rocky for Education, committee chair for the U.S. So we're going to put you on the next docket for that, so you can go revamp it all for us, and I'll take it up. Because I agree that all those skills that we taught those kids last summer were all skills that nobody taught them in school. Yeah. The ideas of goal setting, the ideas of holding yourself accountable and being disciplined to do things, how to work with people, how to network, how to build your own personal brand in this digital world that's out there. I mean, and then, oh, by the way, this is how finances work. And I don't know if Alan was there for this one, but I showed these guys that at one point, today I still I have 7 credit cards for the different businesses and how I do it. I've never used the wrong card. I can tell you at one point when I didn't have 7, I maxed out 2 of them. and I said, and it was a deep, dark day. And I had to, on a Thursday afternoon, go grab a check from a lady, get it in the bank so I can make payroll on Friday. And that's a personal relationship with money that I had to make sure that my guys got paid before I did.
So I make fun of 2 groups of people, attorneys and doctors, since, you know, we were talking about them before. Do you know why attorneys go to law school?
Nope.
No math class. So they don't understand the numbers in their business. And this is why attorneys struggle in business. In the MD programs, if you go through residency, you're not allowed to talk about money. Here we are in something that costs us 20% of our economy, and these doctors aren't allowed to talk about finance and money and how to run a business and how do we evaluate whether something is good or bad financially. That's why your doctors don't have financial conversations with you. They're not taught this at all.
Yeah,
that's why both of these groups struggle, because they're expected to live the rich life.
Huh, that's a great one. I'm going to use that. Actually, my buddy's coming into town. He's a lawyer. I'm going to stick it to him again. Mr. I learned something else. Well, Rocky, I've enjoyed our time together. But before we let you go, we have 3 questions we love to ask everybody. And we want to ask you these because we like to have a lot of fun with these. But the first one is, give us your favorite feature of your home.
So this is a feature that I actually designed and did work on myself, right? Because I knew how to do it. So we remodeled our master bathroom. We had one of these little 36 by 36 fiberglass, like closet, you know, you couldn't even take a nice shower in the thing. Had someone move the tub for me and frame out a new tub. And I built a frameless glass shower and I can look out my glass shower, which looks right outside my window. I can look right outside to the backyard, which we have trees and wood. And sometimes a deer will walk by or a turkey. And I've got multiple jets. So, you know, in the morning, you get 20 minutes to take a shower, clear your mind. I get so much thinking and like ideas and everything else done in the morning from that. And I got great water pressure and hot water. And we actually did the thermal balance. So like if somebody flushes the toilet, you don't even notice because it stays perfect temperature.
And I'll tell you, whoever came up with that, that person does need the Nobel patent. You give them the highest degree ever, because without that, we've all had that happen, man. They take that shower and it just absolutely gets scalded. And you're like, man, I can't stand my shower. So I love that. And I love my bathroom as well. We do a lot of bathroom remodeling here. I could go talk about days for that. So
it takes the fun away, though. Don't you remember in college, you know, somebody, your roommate jumps in the shower and you just immediately go flush the toilet just to hear him scream?
I think that happened to me. Usually when I was living in a big house with guys, I'd hear somebody else turn the shower on because you could hear it and your water pressure go way down.
See, Rocky, there's another reason to go to college, so you can torture your roommates.
There. So that's
what. Have you been to college lately? They got granite and beautiful bathrooms. And
I know, I'm paying tuition right now.
Right. That's why tuition's so expensive.
All right, question number two. Give us one of your biggest customer service pet peeves.
So this is in your industry, right? Don't return my calls or don't show up when you said you were going to. I just went through this. I had to have one of my tenants has heat problems. Yeah, I'll be there. A couple of days later. Did you get there? No. When can you be there by tomorrow? Yes. 3 days later, no show.
It is one of the reasons I started the Home Service Institute was because of that exact thing. We all need to be better at this.
Here's the real funny thing. The last time he went to one of my tenants and repaired it, and he actually showed up really well that time, he still hasn't billed me. I am like, dude, can you send me a bill?
He's the guy who's going to call you in 30 days going, hey, Rocky, man, you got to pay me, man. What's going on? You're like, did you ever send me the invoice?
A fractional CFO.
He needs Rocky's help. We all do in our industry. Trust me. That's a big, that's a huge customer service pet peeve for many people, the lack of callback. All right.
The one I'm waiting for.
You ready? Yeah. Here we go. The one we love to have the most fun with. Give us a DIY or a contractor nightmare story.
So we had a tenant trash a house.
Ooh.
Something bad. And, you know, so the first guy who's in there is the guy who's got to, you know, clean out stuff and get rid of the odors and all of that. And he just late, took forever. We had to rip out floorboards, and I thought he was going to do it, but he subbed it. So the guy who's ripping out floorboards is cutting things that he shouldn't be cutting. Kind of created a big mess. And then the worst part of it is, you know, I call the guy to like, hey, where are we at with these things? Are we, because I need him to clear it, because until he clears it, I can't start rebuilding. Right. And he starts screaming at me about paying him. I'm like, did you send me an invoice? Like, you want money? Send me an invoice. I'll pay you whatever you tell me. I don't even need an invoice. Tell me how much you want. And it turned into, it delayed our project like 4 months, I think, just trying to get through that whole process. And then my guys had to come back in and fix some of the messes that he made.
Yeah, it's hilarious when people sometimes call us and say, I've had another contractor in, but I need to have you guys come out and clean up after him. And I'm like, oh boy, now we got to go redo a bunch of stuff that was done incorrectly. And sometimes it's just cheaper to let us have started before. And then they never want to hear that you're about to charge more than the other guy who screwed it up in the first place.
So they transfer their hate of them onto you immediately, don't they?
Yeah, I've had to train my guys that you're really not the hero. No. We come behind contractors here locally. There's a number of organizations that will stand behind consumers and help them, and we'll come in and fix after the fact. And in the beginning, I thought they thought we'd be heroes. And usually there's total animosity, lack of trust. And because they've been burned and so scorned, I mean, they're that beaten dog out of the shelter. We're really not going to be their heroes. At best, we will have restored faith that people are good, but the next guy maybe get to be the hero.
You know who else is not your hero and nobody realizes this? It's your accountant. And I'll tell you why. If your accountant calls you up and says, hey, you're really profitable this year, you owe 30 grand in taxes, you will scream and yell at that accountant and curse him out. So if the accountant calls you up and says, hey, you should go buy a truck, because then you won't have to pay taxes this year. You'll go out and spend 100 grand on that beautiful truck and have it wrapped. And the accountant will be like, look, you paid zero taxes. And about 3 months later, you'll be like, how come I can't pay my bills? Where's my cash? I'm struggling. And yeah. It's because they don't want to get yelled at by you. So they'll tell you to do something stupid so you don't yell at them.
That's right. That's a good one. Yes. Actually, I've done the same damn thing. Oh, man. So many mistakes I've made. All right. Rocky, before we let you go, how can people find you? Because Rocky, I think you've got a lot you can give to a lot of people. We've defined your avatar. And if you're listening to this podcast, you definitely want to reach out to Rocky. So how can everybody get a hold of you?
So my podcast is Profit Answer Man. And on there, what I do, I just teach everything I do with my clients. So if you're struggling financially, go listen. You can implement. We teach everything. We go through the whole Profit First book and we just give away everything. And then if you want help, then there's contact there and you can reach out and we'll help you too. But everything I do, I teach how you can do it yourself.
That's great that you did that. You offer that up to everybody because that's going to be a thing that a lot of people want to subscribe and hear about what you got to offer first, and then they'll become a customer after they get to know, like, and trust you. And having listened to a number of your podcasts, I do know, like, and trust you as well. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing some insights with us and look forward to hearing from you more in the future and your free podcast. And maybe, who knows, maybe even one day I'll actually be a paying customer. I don't know.
Thanks, Rocky.
All right, Rocky. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Small Business Safari. Don't forget to go out and rate, review, and follow me. And if you like this episode, go out and check out my other episodes or check out my Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn for other great content. And remember, your positive attitude will help you achieve your higher altitude in the wild world of small business ownership. Until next time, make it a great day, Adventure Team.